Welcome to the Classical Records Podcast, a podcast where we discuss cultural circumstances of classical composers. This podcast is produced on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Squamish people. So in this podcast, we are linking the composers' lives to the 21st century by zooming in on environmental, racial, gender, mental health topics, anything that is important. The upcoming VSO concept dedicates one of its program points to the Sinfonia Concertante by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, a piece showcasing the virtuosity of the violin and the viola, a rarely featured instrument in 1779, the year of its publication. In today's episode, I want to zoom into the fascinating sociological and historical setup of Mozart and the viola. I couldn't be joined by a more qualified person to chat with, the principal viola of the VSO, Hung Wei Huang. Born in Taipei, Taiwan, violist Hung Wei Huang was serving as a principal viola in the Hong Kong Seoul Philharmonic and guest principal viola of the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, the London Symphony Orchestra, and London Philharmonic Orchestra, as well as a guest professor at the Korean National University of Art. And in 2020, he won the position of principal viola of the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra. Welcome, Hung Wei.
Hello.
Hello. So we're chatting today about the viola, and I will just bring this up super briefly, but I think at this point it is common knowledge that within an orchestra, the viola suffers of a big quantity of jokes. And I truly wonder why that is the case, because I believe while I was prepping for this interview with you, that actually currently the most valued instrument in the world, it's not yet sold though, by Sotheby's, is the McDonald viola. So it is a fantastic instrument. Have you come across this instrument at all, and can you share anything about it?
Actually, very fortunately, actually when this viola was on the market, and then it did come to Asia when I was in Korea at the time, I actually play on this instrument, and I must say it's an honor to come across for such an instrument, because it's not only a viola, it's actually part of a history that people should know. Well, it is a very important history of musical instrument. Actually, I know the viola was what was asking for 45 million, if I remember, and it was not sold. But many people was arguing the most most expensive violin was sold nowhere even half close to the asking price. But there are only 12 or 13 viola left by Strad in this world.
Yeah, it is interesting how the viola has such a special position. So what you're saying, like, yeah, that Stradivari just made just a fraction of instruments in contrast to the violin and the cello. And yeah, also when it comes to literature that is only dedicated to the viola, it is just a fraction of what is dedicated to the violin and the cello. And I truly wonder why that is so, because Mozart himself, if I understand correctly, actually really valued the viola as a great instrument.
I have played a lot of Mozart's quintet. I mean, he did write many viola quintets, meaning, you know, his string quartet plus one more viola playing second. And then he wrote a lot of beautiful lines for viola. And I believe he knew the instrument very, very well. And then in my opinion, many composers wrote things for violin or for a so-called the soloistic instrument to start, because in many ways it's easier to do so. Because, you know, when you write something for, let's say, flute or oboe, or even trumpet or for violin, cello, their register are very distinct. As a soloist, they can project. But for viola, For me, being a violist myself, viola is a very awkward instrument. Like if you go by the ratio or go by the register, the average viola size is about 16 inch. And then for violin, the full size violin is about 14 inch. For viola is 16. And then some of them like goes up to 17. Strat did build one, made one that's 21 inch. But the thing is, in order for the viola instrument that registers to speak or to vibrate in the proper way, the instrument needs to go more than 21 inch. I think impossible to play. Maybe Shaquille O'Neal can do that if he learned to play. But most composers just do not understand this instrument until later on.
Mm-hmm. That is a great explanation, because I can totally see how maybe Mozart liked that challenge to make it heard, because yeah, you have to be quite clever to arrange the other instruments in a way to feature the viola. That is great. Yeah, I mean, 1779, the year in which Mozart published the Sinfonia Concertante, you can argue this for any time in history, but also 1779 marked a lot of big changes. The Enlightenment was in full swing, especially in Central Europe. There were so many to this day renowned authors, and industrialization was just picking up in Britain. So I can totally see how maybe Mozart was in 1779 thinking about, yeah, how to be a bit more innovative than, he was an innovative person in the first place, but how he could basically push it up a notch even more so. And a really great article published in the LA Times from 2020 has the stance that maybe Mozart chose the Sinfonia Concertante as a father-son affair, with the overbearing Leopold taking the violin part and Wolfi on the viola. This is a quote directly from this great article from the LA Times. I'll post the link on the page. And I was wondering, can you see this, some sort of father-son quarrel in the Sinfonia Concertante when you're playing with the violin?
I do think it's definitely not just conversation. It could be an argument or a quarrel. And then almost like human communicating each other's emotion the deepest way. And one of things that I often, I want to let people know, like when people talk about Mozart, we think about this child prodigy or God-given talent. Yeah. That's probably the first two things that people know, or people think, oh yeah, Mozart, such a genius, right? And then this prodigy. But nobody ever imagined or just think in reality, this genius grew up. He actually grew up. He did. Yeah, he was not 5-6 years old genius who wrote opera or did all this composition when he was not even teenager. We're talking about like single digit. Yeah, but this apology, he grew up to a man, and he did suffer just like all other human beings. So when we hear that, when we hear his music, like you don't just say, oh, because Mozart, he has to be light, he has to be happy, bubbly all the time. That's not a human being.
I think that's a really great point. And yeah, if we all think back of the age of 23, I can clearly remember where I was when I was 23, I think. And Mozart wrote this piece when he was 22, 23. And I think it is a very funny age. And often we portray the 20s as the best times in our lives, so much better than our teens, or so much better than our 30s or 40s. And I actually think that the 20s are some of the hardest decades one could ever face. Like those are the times when, especially back in the 18th century, your parents would die. And as you've just said, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart was very close to his parents just because of touring with them, or being maybe also pushed by them a lot. And And I think, yeah, that is a really brilliant point to think about Mozart as a 23-year-old composing this music, a human being challenged with love, not really knowing whom to marry, other people telling him who to marry. So I think this biographical connection
actually,
is really interesting.
Every time when I hear this piece, especially in the slow movement, I really feel Mozart was trying to ask for help. And like in the violin part, it's always, even in the beginning of this violin part, when it starts in the solo part, you just feel like, oh, what am I going to do? Or like, it's, really? I just don't think it's going to work. And they say, oh, no, right? And then, I'm very proudly to announce that when the viola comes in, it actually shows, or the melody or the harmony is actually shows, even though you're going through this, but there is a light. You could see the light. Yeah, you don't have to be this depressed. So this conversation, obviously, this piece was published. Well, I wouldn't be surprised. It was composed in the year after his father passed away. And it could be, and we all know, there are a lot of things that he and his father didn't get along, but they were the closest. Right? So that part is just the way I feel. Mozart being such so-called a genius, he only can release his emotional stress through the music he composed, and we can see that.
Yeah, that is and luckily so for us that we still to this day can witness it, because it is truly gorgeously written, and yeah, especially featuring the viola, I think it's really, really great. To close off today's podcast session here, I want to quote an article that I found published in 1941 in the journal Music and Letters by J. Arthur Watson. He was writing a pretty long piece about Mozart and the viola, really going through all his quartets and quintets and amongst others, also the Sinfonia Concertante. And he obviously also tried to get to the point of, okay, why is the viola? Why does it have this very special position? And I just want to quote him as he says, "As the spider sits at the center of her web, so the viola lies at the musical core of the quartet. This instrument, and that is also why a treatment of the viola is an index of a composer's quality." And I think, yeah, in Mozart's composition, it really neatly shows that he is really, truly able to handle the viola. Thank you so much, Hangwei, for joining me today. But we cannot part without asking you for your favorite viola joke. Can you share it with us?
Well, one of my favorite viola jokes is called The Map. Do you know the joke, The Map?
I don't think so.
They always somehow the viola jokes always start with the second violinist. So the second violinist, he went to an antique shop and he saw this stuff. So he bought a lamp. And after he gets home, he thought, oh, why don't I rub it? No, it couldn't hurt. No, maybe something will happen. So he did. And then the genie actually came out. So the genie told him, well, I'm not the one you think, but because that one is our master, he's a powerful one. Even though I'm not so powerful, but I can still grant you one wish. One wish. Okay, then the violinist said, okay, if the one wish I would like to ask for world peace, because I hate war. And then the genie said, no, at least you know I'm not powerful. Do you have something that's less challenging? And they said, okay, fine. And then he took out the map. How about this part, this eastern part, just this part? How about you stop that part, stop war at that area? Then, no, I'm sure many things would be better. And then he said, okay, that part I understand, no, but it's still about religion and it's been going on for a while. Do you have something just easier for me, please? He said, how about this? Just for one concert, For one concert, can you make my orchestra viola section play in tune? Just one concert. And the genie said, let me see the map again.
That is so funny. Yeah, why is that so? I think the viola section sounds always so, so wonderful. I think it is a false rumor.
Come to Vancouver Symphony Orchestra. Our viola section is very strong and very sweet. Yeah, I love them. Yeah,
wonderful. I'm really looking forward to hearing it in person this weekend. Thank you so much, Hung Wai, for joining me today here at Classical Records. Have a great afternoon.